Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Sandan. I'm the research assistant at Institute of Chinese Studies, New Delhi. On the behalf of the Institute, I welcome you all to today's edition of ICS Wednesday. The topic under discussion is Liu Cixun's and Three-Body Global and Domestic Impact and Implications of Chinese Science Fiction. The book, The Three-Body Problem, has won a number of national and international awards, within which has marked the beginning of Chinese and domestic impact and beginning of Chinese science fiction journey into the West at a time when world's political, economic, and literary center of gravity is moving eastward. The seminar will also touch upon Liu's influence on contemporary and young Chinese writers, critics, and researchers, and contribution to the development of the genre in China. Our speaker today is Mr. Shanky Chandra, who is an assistant professor and head of department in the School of Languages at Doon University, Dehradun. He is also a PhD scholar at JNU under the supervision of Dr. Hemant Adlaka, and he is also a teaching assistant fellow. His research interests are in contemporary Chinese science fiction. Joining as chair is Professor Mary E. John, who was a former professor and director at the Center for Women's Development Studies, New Delhi. Her areas of interest span in the field of women's studies and feminism with the social science. A very warm welcome to both of you. Before I hand over to the chair, I'd like to apprise you all of the housekeeping rules. Kindly during the presentation, questions can be posted in the box anytime during the presentation, or using a hand raise during the question and answer session. Please unmute yourself and called upon by the chair to do so. With this,
thank you, Sugandha, for your introduction, and to the ICS for actually asking me a total imposter here to be the chair of this, what I think will be a very exciting talk this afternoon. My only claim to any kind of presence here is that I have some interest in China, I have visited China, and I have read in English the trilogy, Liu Cixun's trilogy in English, Ken Liu's translation, which I'm told is a very remarkable translation. Shanky Chandra has already been introduced, and the only additional information I would like to share with you here is that he is a recipient of the ICS Harvard Yenching Institute Fellowship, the doctoral fellowship that has, I think, maybe played some part in the research that has been at the back of this presentation. It's a prestigious fellowship that I think the ICS organizes and hosts every year. And it's a very, very significant mode whereby students in India have the opportunity to spend significant time both at Harvard as well as in China itself, and with I'm sure amazing results in terms of their capacity to undertake the research they would like to do. So Shanky, you're also in some ways exhibiting that fellowship in your presentation here. Without further ado, I have really nothing more to add at this stage, and really look forward to your talk and the discussion that will follow.
Thank you so much, ma'am. And thank you to the all of the respected members and the participants in the today's Wednesday webinar. I think I already, you know, introduced myself. So once again, my name is Shanky Chandra, and currently I'm the assistant professor and head of the Department of Chinese Studies, Doon University. Currently I'm pursuing my PhD, and the topic of my PhD is the socio-political and cultural factors in the making of Chinese science fiction writer, the Liu Cixun. So before I'll start my the presentation, I would like to mention that when I choose this particular topic, in 2000, between the 2015 and 16, I was not pretty sure about it because I have gone through this particular novel in Chinese. And to be very honest, since 10 to 11 years after, delving so much in Chinese language and everything, it's quite difficult to get or to absorb all the, the characters, the narrative of the novel as well. Until unless the publication of the, the Three Body Problem in English in 2015. It was published in 2014, but after winning the Hugo Award in India, it was available, I think, after 2015, if I'm not very wrong about it. But I was not pretty sure about it. Yes, I was quite, curious, a big fan of science fiction, like Asimov, iRobot, and Star Trek, and everything. But that is not enough for the research perspective. So I have consulted with my professor, Dr. Hemanath Lakha, and he actually helped me a lot that how to devise your research with this particular topic. At the time, only 6 CNKI articles were available on this particular topic, especially on Chinese science fiction, which is actually written by the one professor, Professor Wu Yan from the Beijing Normal University. 6 or 7 articles from Hindu, the Business Standard, and the Indian Express. That's it. That was the only material which is available at the time. So I thought that this particular amount of, the material and research and all sort of material is not feasible for this research. The only option at that time was available is this particular scholarship, that is the ICS HYS scholarship. My classmate, Nishit, who actually did a very good, he recently published his PhD as well, and who did a research on Moyen, he helped me a lot. And he actually explained the most of this, the peculiarities with the scholarship and everything. So in 2018, I started working on the statement of purpose. And I really work hard for this particular scholarship because science fiction is a genre which most of the time, especially from the English department, they said that they don't consider it as a genre. They said it's a part of literature. We don't consider it as a special genre. So it's quite disputed, especially in terms of the Chinese science fiction as well. So this particular scholarship played a very important role in my research because when I got this particular scholarship, I went to China and the Beijing Normal University. Because of the recognition of ICS HYS, I got a lot of positive response from most of the Chinese authors who actually in the past, I don't think that most of the authors, even the professor, they didn't reply my email before I got the scholarship as well. Because they are also looking for any kind of, the recognition and any kind of, collaboration as well. So I got a lot of positive response. I got a lot of invitation in most of the sci-fi con in China and their conference. I met lots of, including the Liu Cixin himself. And we discussed a lot of problems as such. Then I went to Harvard, and that was it's a resource heaven, I would say. The Widener Library and the material which was available under the supervision of Professor Ming Wei Sung from the Wellesley College. He actually, evaluate, or I would say he actually discussed the main thing which we're not able to discuss in China as such. So that is it's a kind of eureka movement at the Harvard as well. So I would say that this particular scholarship played a very important role, and without this scholarship, I don't think that I will reach to this point that today, which I have, reached and, with my all kind of research and everything. But anyways, so today I will start my presentation. The topic of my presentation is the Liu Cixin and the Three-Body Problem, the global and domestic impact and implication of Chinese science fiction. So since it's a very, vast topic, and I will try to cover all the important aspects of this research, because I'm pretty bad with the time management as well. So I will do my best. So I think that it's quite visible as such. Okay, no problem.
Yes.
So the aim of this study is actually All right. To examine the relationship between the three-body problem and the sudden rise of the Chinese science fiction, especially after the English publication of the three-body problem, and the impact of the three-body problem on the domestic and international science fiction scenarios, even whether it is academic or even the commercial circuits as well. And the third one is it's a quite new phenomenon in China, not in the, what we say, in the Western world, that the Chinese science fiction with soft power projection, they are looking for some kind of visibility with the soft power as well. So the three-body problem was the first modern Chinese science fiction novel written by the Liu Cixin, which is published in the English actually, and it was released in 2014. And it was a big hit at the time. Former US President Barack Obama and Mark Zuckerberg were among the many who praised the novel. And it won the Hugo Award, which is a kind of Nobel Prize for the science fiction as well. And the Liu Cixin became popular since it was published in 2008 in Chinese, but the Western world and even the outside of China, most of the readers, including the science fiction readers, they didn't have any kind of idea about that until unless this particular novel won the Hugo Award in 2014. So even though the Chinese science fiction has a long history since 1901, when the Lu Xun, he translated the Jules Verne, The Journey to the Moon, and the other H.G. Wells novels in Chinese, but it was not until the publication of the three-body problem that people learned about the Chinese science fiction. So generally the three-body problem trilogy, which actually written around the 2006 to 2010, it was published in the magazine as a series of stories from 2006 in Chinese, and then they compiled into the book around 2008. And it was published in the Chongqing as well, which has a very quite interesting story as well. And this novel revolves around the society, you know, the complicated reaction and the change under the premise that aliens are on their way to invade. Even though the alien invasion are not unknown to China, very few people pay attention at that time. So however, Three-Body Problem was published, it became the best-selling science fiction novel. Since it released, it has sold, I'm sorry, there is a typo mistake, it's like almost 1 million copies in China till now. And it is still, I think, the third most popular novel in China till to this day. And many readers purchase the physical education book after reading the ebook. So we can, you know, multiply the number of publication as the number of copies as well after buying the ebooks as well. Now, why the Liu Cixin? Why not the other? Like the Han Song, who is very famous for his the science fiction work, The Song of the Life, and Wang Jing Kang, and the other science fiction writer like Hershey and Bao Shu. Why the Liu Cixin? And it is a very difficult question as well, because without reading all the major science fiction novel, I don't think it is appropriate to comment on this particular question as such. So the first reason is that he is the most outstanding Chinese writer, the science fiction writer. And according to the Professor David Wang, this is one of the best literature which China can offer to the world. And the main reason is since most of the literature is highly censored by the government, so for the writer, especially the science fiction writer, the only platform available in China to write something about freedom, write something which is quite, of course, the utopian, but which makes some kind of, you know, relation with the democracy, with some kind of, you know, the freedom of thought. The only platform available in China is the best platform available in China is the science fiction. And the second reason is that his work have been translated into English and 12 other languages. Now, this is a measure to evaluate the quality of the novel, since it was translated more than 12 to 16 languages. And it is also considered that if the translation in the many languages, if the translation is quite good, then the quality and the authenticity of the original work is also very good. The Chinese science fiction has remained largely a mystery to the outside world until his works published in English. So it is a kind of floodgate as well for the Chinese science fiction to the Western world. Before that, most of the people, except the science fiction fans, and I would say those who are in this particular field, they know about very few science fiction writers in China. But after the publication of the three-body problem, it's a kind of navigate, and it also promotes lots of young Chinese science fiction writer, which is nowadays, it is also available in the English translation as well. And he was the first Asian and the Chinese author to win Hugo Award since 1952. And it is also very, it's quite interesting because there was a heated discussion during the Hugo Award, the voting, and they have that what kind of authenticity, because the English translation is different from the Chinese translation, because the Chinese translation is highly censored by the government, whereas the English translation, which is actually done by the Kunlio, it has the element of the Cultural Revolution, it has the element of lots of freedom, and I won't say the democracy as well, but some element which is still not the permissible in the Chinese scenario as well. And it was the first translated work to win the Hugo Award. And that is a very major thing. And not from Chinese, but from all over the world. It is the first translated work which actually won the Hugo Award. Now, I will put some light on his, about the history and about his a kind of small biography that he was born in 1963. And the son of a former national coal system expert. Both his parents, mother and father, were persecuted during the Cultural Revolution, and they were demoted and sent to the Shanxi, because his father, including his mother as well, was seen as a bad element in the Liu's family background, because they had some kind of relation with the KMT or even the anti-communist fraction as well. And after that, he was graduated from the Electric Power Engineering Institute from the Shanxi. And in 1989, he started working. So most of his free time, that how he, the kill time, that most of the time he play either the cards or the mahjong, that is the Chinese, gambling. Sorry. So one day he lost his whole month wage, around 800 yuan in one night playing the cards. And that was a wake up call for him. At that time, he decided that he has to choose something else. And then he started writing science fiction. So he started writing while working in his day job, and he had achieved a national prominence by the late of 1990s. But unless the publication of the three-body problem in English, he didn't get the reception which he currently enjoy in China. So what makes the three-body problem so famous, and what are the reasons for not including the other Chinese science fiction in the same category? Now, according to the Professor David Wang, because actually this particular statement is given by the Professor David Wang, that it is now the China's best literature that can be offered to the world. It's one of the most authentic, which include all the historical paradoxes, including Cultural Revolution, and some of the element of the Tiananmen Square as well, which that most of the reviewers, they don't accept it, but Professor Ming Wei-sung, he said that yes, there are some elements of the Tiananmen Square incident as well. And this is the first time that we have seen how China view the world and the universe. And if we look at the theme of the three trilogy, and the especially the first one, we can receive a very very strong message that only the Chinese can save the planet. Then the original trauma of the Liu Cixin, a man who suffered so much during the Cultural Revolution, this novel somehow depicts his his personal life and his personal experience during the Cultural Revolution and other historical events. For example, he mentioned in the very first novel, he mentioned about the Ye Wenjie, who was the main, the protagonist of the novel, whose father was killed by the Red Guards in front of her at the Tsinghua University. And all sort of, the chaos was going on. This is somehow like Liu Cixin, he simply rejected this particular, notion. But this is somehow is well connected with the famous astrophysics professor, the Fang Liqi, who was the main, one of the leader in terms of academic circle, who was the main leader during the time of Tiananmen Square. He himself was an astrophysics, and then he got the political asylum from the United States. So somehow the character of the Ye Wenjie is more or less connected to the Fang Liqi as well. And the second thing is, that when his father and mother were deported during the Cultural Revolution, then he went to his the grandmother place in Hunan. So at that time, I think that in 1975, that the famous the dam catastrophe was happened, when almost 2,000 small or big dam collapsed, you know, all together, and it was one of the major catastrophe in China. And he has seen a lot of, you know, the people, the homeless people, and the, you know, the floods and everything. So we can find a particular theme in his novel, that how to connect the people and how to, you know, the value the human life as well. And as with many other sci-fi stories, he also deals with the contact with the other part of the universe. So it's a kind of universal theme, which is also connected to the Western, so that the people or the reader from the outside of China, they can make some kind of, you know, correlation with the novel as well. Now, what are the domestic impact and which triggered the domestic sci-fi fever? There are lots of, you know, elements, and there are lots of what we say events and lots of phenomena in China. But I will mention some particular, which is quite important, especially for this presentation. The first one is that the Chia Wang Chie, very famous author as well. So he published the Alien Defense Plan, A History of Search for the Extraterrestrial Civilization, which chronicled the history of humanity's exploration of extraterrestrial civilization, the Fermi paradox, and the author's customized defense plan over the 150 years ago, and Lucian proposal to the National People's Congress about the alien defense, number one. Number two, in March 2011, when Qing Tongmao and Li Shiqin, these two are the famous nuclear scientists and the physics in China. So they were giving the talk, and they were talking about the derivation of the orbit of, you know, the exoplanet, and a kind of self-developed algorithm, which is also mentioned in the novel as well. So many audience members were talking about the Liu Cixin novel, discussing whether the device for converting into dead star was plausible as well. Here we can see the scientific feasibility, or the scientific, what we say, possibility with the, all kind of the Liu Cixin imagination, especially related to the three-body problem. In 2013, the Fang Yue, a student of School of Economics of Peking University, wrote Love, Life, Hope, A Concise History of Galactic Social Analysis to the address the Dark Forest Theory. This is the first time a scholar who actually mentioned the Dark Forest Theory, which is actually posited in the three-body problem. And from the Aerospace University, they are also talking about the future of space according to the three-body problem. But the most important is the famous astronomer, the Li Miao, who published his book, The Physics in Three-Body Problem, in 2014. The book explained many of the scientific principles in three-body problem, and the book makes a systematic introduction to the contemporary physics as well. So these are the, you know, the main events which is triggered into the academic circle. Apart from that, in the, like, the internet is full of the three-body problem merchandise, including t-shirt, badges, necklace. On Weibo, many people, they created their ID, which is related to the characters of the three-body problem. And these characters express their remarks as well. But the most important and the famous event is that Netflix has officially announced the three-body problem, written by the Alexander Wu of True Blood and David Benioff, and the DV, The Ways of Game of Thrones. The science fiction drama will be produced by the Game of Thrones duo, Big Head, Little Head production firm. It's a very big event, because although in 2016, they tried to direct a picture on this novel, but it is quite difficult to, you know, what we say, to create or to make a movie as well. But now, since the Netflix, they are looking for the possibility of making three-body problem, and they are working on that. So it's a quite a positive news about this novel as well. So these are the domestic, you know, the events which is actually triggered by the science fiction three-body problem. So how big is the world impact of the three-body problem? So if we look at the search item on Google from 2004 to the till present, so we can see the graph as well, where there is no further movement. There is a slight you know, upward movement during the 2006 when the first volume of the three-body problem was serialized in Science Fiction World magazine. Then we can go to till the 2014 when the English translation by the Cunliffe was published by the Tor Books in 2000. That is fine. But it was the main event was when the Hugo Award for the best novel was given to the, what we say, the Hugo and the Nebula Award for the best science fiction novel. And the Liu Cixin won both the prizes. This was the Eureka moment when the people realized that, oh, on the other side of the earth, there is a science fiction novel called The Three-Body Problem. So from that moment of time, we can see that this particular craft, that how the searchers can predict that how the people, they are following the, you know, the all the progress and, you know, the news about the science fiction novel. But that is not the enough. What about the reader's choice? What about the audience? So I did a lot of, you know, survey with the Topan and all, most of the Chinese, you know, what we say, kind of good reads, but they are very manipulated and they are highly censored. So I took the, you know, the most authentic, what we say, the reviews from the Goodreads, and it took me a lot of time. So I went through the website and I actually look at the most of the, you know, the comments, the reviews till 2018, not till now. And then what I realized that since the English version of the Three-Body Problem was released, the world's largest reader website and the, you know, they were discussing constantly the Three-Body Problem from 2014 till now. At the number of 2016, there were 26,645 readers who paid attention to Three-Body Problem in 3 years. Almost 8,000 people, they gave 5 out of 10, that is a 33%. More than 9,000 people, they gave 4 out of 10, that is a 40%, which indicate that 73% of readers liked it. 3,571 readers wrote book reviews. It is quite huge as compared to, like, we can compare with the Harry Potter as well. So in these book reviews, we uncover the Three-Body Problem secret code to win the favor of the reader around the world. But the most interesting phenomena is that we can see that, of course, the most of the reviews basically came from United Kingdom, Australia, Spain, Canada. But what about Romania, Indonesia, Tanzania, and countries like what we say, Croatia, Kuwait, and lots of small countries as well. Even though the readers' reviews were not like as compared to the US or United Kingdom, it's not as much as we can see with the other countries. But that is the impact of the Three-Body Problem, not only in the major Western countries, but even in the small countries such as Kuwait, Croatia, Tanzania, and the African countries as well. So what I realized, and I calculated the, you know, the whole comment and everything, and it was quite a lengthy process as well, that 27% of the reader indicated it as a good Chinese science fiction, 28% thought the work was excellent, and 17% thought it was outstanding. So these three items added up to 73%, which confirmed that number of more than 20,000 readers who gave Three-Body Problem a score of 4 or 5, which is quite, you know, a phenomenon. And the second thing is that after the publication of the Three-Body Problem, people also paying, you know, start, you know, paying attention on the translation and the quality of the translation. There is no doubt that the translation play a very important role, especially in this case as well, because without the English translation, I don't think that most of the people, they will get any kind of information or any kind of, you know, idea about the Chinese science fiction, which is quite available since, you know, since 50s or 60s, the modern science fiction as such. But because of the Cunliffe, because he himself is a software engineer, but now he's a full-time science fiction writer. So he paid a lot of attention. He gave footnotes in the English translation for the Cultural Revolution and most of the Chinese events, which I think that most of the Western reader and non-Chinese expert, they don't have any idea about it. So that is quite good. So his translation is highly commendable. And it becomes one of the biggest export of China as well. Like in 1800, when the science fiction was introduced to China, the main purpose is that to plant the seeds of creativity and to provide more information about science and technology in the Western world by the means of literature as well. But after that, it's a kind of reverse process. Like the China now, they are exporting a lot of you know, science fiction to the Western world, and we can see that if we calculate like more than 100,000 copies, that's already, they published. And why this quite read? Because most of the science fiction, novels since 1919, they don't even make it to the 10,000 copies. But now they are actually public, they publish more than, 1 million copies. Now the figures are quite old. So it is very important that how important and what is the impact in the Western world of the three-body problem, especially as a reader and as a receiver as well. And apart from that, they are also, capturing the movie market as well. We have to keep in our mind that the science fiction, especially the movie market is huge. It's in billions of dollars. And the author Liu Cixin, Three-Body Problem, and the blockbuster movie The Wanderer, which is actually a different novel, have played a very major role in igniting the current renaissance of the genre. And it was a hit in 2019, and it earns more than $719 million, dollars. That was the complete revenue for domestic and the international as well. And the creation of the Beijing Science Fiction Industry Fund, which aims to invest 1 billion yuan in the city's science fiction industry. I went to this particular place and I have noted that a lot of firms from the defense industries, whether it is Chengdu Fighter Corporation and whether it is, I forget the name, but that is the equivalent of the DARPA, the defense application from the United States. So they are investing lots of money in science fiction, and they are recruiting a lot of people from the science fiction industry in the defense, in the scientific community and other places, because science fiction is also, it's a kind of laboratory in which you can test a lot of theories and a lot of, the implication of without testing anything, that what could be the after effect of nuclear warfare or the winter or something, and the possibility of the AI warfare, the possibility of the AI versus human, just like the Terminator 2. So I have noticed that they are actually, the Chinese government, they are incorporating science fiction with lots of other things. But here is the fact that why they are doing so, because they don't talk about it and they don't even mention on the papers, they are actually using Chinese science fiction as a tool of teaching science and creativity. And what happened in 2002, the Chinese government, they sent a delegation to the most of the important, MNCs, whether it is Cisco, the Microsoft, the NASA and Boeing and Lockheed Martin, to survey that why the American scientists and technocrats, they are very good at creativity and innovation. One of the most common things they have found is that the most of the, the top engineers and the technocrats, they used to read science fiction in their childhood days. So science fiction is actually plant the seeds of creativity in the mind of the, the masses, in the mind of the, especially in the children. So that is the main reason that why the Americans, but why the most of the, the free and the democratic countries, including the Soviet Union as well, they have the controlled science fiction, which is highly censored, but quite creative. So those who used to read a lot of science fiction, they are actually very creative in the future as well. And Mao Zedong, he himself, included many of the Lu Xun, works and everything. And he discussed about the science fiction in his Yan'an talk, very small portion, I think not more than 2 or 3 lines, but he mentioned about it. So that's how we can understand the importance of the science fiction in the Chinese society. And the number of studies have been done in the science fiction, especially in China, which actually helped to create more innovation and creativity among the young adults and the children as well. But this is actually started after the trade tension with the United States and the suspicion that the President Biden ultimate aim is to thwart China rise and have added urgency to those efforts. So refusing China's access to technology could produce an unintended result, driving China to strengthen its own innovation and research capabilities. Of course, the Chinese, they are looking, by hook and crook and by any means necessary, they are looking to get most of the IPs and most of the, patents and everything. And they are trying to shifting the economy from the export oriented to the, from the export oriented economy to the innovation hub. But it's a very difficult task for the Chinese. But on this particular event, the Liu Cixin, he actually said that we are already reliant on chip imports since chips can be purchased very simply. And Leo further explained that there is a barrier in place. Therefore, We are at the forefront of the space technology. So Liu's novel, The Three-Body Problem, presents the scenario of how a highly sophisticated alien civilization attempts to impede scientific development on Earth through various means. So because of the science fiction can arouse the imagination of its readers, so Liu believes that it may help to China's technological advancement. So here we can see that the China also using, science fiction, especially after the publication of Three-Body Problem, using science fiction to plant the seeds of the creativity in the young adult and even in the children. But we have to keep in our mind that before that, and Chinese science fiction was actually purged twice. It was banned twice by the government. First time, it was in the Cultural Revolution, because it is considered as anti-Marxist and a utopian, which is quite not comprehensible with the Marxist theories as well. So most of the science fiction writers were persecuted during the Cultural Revolution. Some of them committed suicide. But the second time, it was in the anti-spiritual movement during the time of during the rule of Deng Xiaoping. And it is quite interesting because they mentioned that, again, it's anti-Marxist literature. We can't promote it. It has no sense at all. But one of the interview, the Professor Wu Yan, he actually stated, but that was not the reason that why they banned the science fiction. The Chinese government, they are very particular keen, like they are very keen about the science fiction, because science fiction is the literature of the future. So the government, they are highly afraid that if he or she, if a science fiction writer, if they write anything about the future of the China, especially, for example, that in future there is no Communist Party in China, what are the consequences? What it can trigger a very huge discussion among the masses, especially among the children and the young adult. For that reason, they always put Chinese science fiction not in the adult literature or not in the mature literature, but into the category of the Chinese literature. All the award, which is won by most of the science fiction writers, under the category of the children's literature. So now, after the publication of the 2004, the Three-Body Problem, they actually provide some freedom. But before that, the Chinese government, they are very strict about the science fiction novels and most of the works. And this is, for China, it's a quite new phenomena, but for the Western world, I don't think it's a time-tested. I would say that during the Reagan administration, they have a plan against the USSR, which is called the Star War Programs, and it is actually it's a theme of the science fiction writer, and they actually compile all kind of plan that they have the laser guns which can destroy the ICBM in the space. They can put ICBM in the space and target to the USSR, and I was quite shocked that the majority of the scientists in the Soviet Union, they are quite afraid of this kind of plan. But actually, it was a part of the science fiction. So the Chinese government, they are also looking for some kind of the soft power position through the science fiction, because it is the least, I would say, politically contaminated literature in China. And it has a very positive image, especially after 2014, because of all kind of world recognition and everything. But the most important thing is that science fiction can project a country's image in a very scientific, in a very technical manner, that it will provide an image of that this country is very powerful, technically very advanced. I do remember that when I watched most of the the Hollywood movies, whether it is Terminator 2 or something, the only message I got from those movies is that don't mess with America. The same is like that. But that is not the only problem that the Chinese are facing. They already spend more than $6 billion in Confucius Institutes and the Xi Jinping app to learn about China and everything. But they didn't get very positive result about that. But after the Liu Cixin won the Hugo Award for the best science fiction in 2014, the vice president of China, Li Yuanqiao, he actually invited the Liu Cixin and other delegation of science fiction writers and called Fuel the Faith of Youth in Realizing the Goal of the Chinese Dream. This was the real turning point with the larger picture in which the Chinese science fiction in all its major form was the first time projected as a nationalistic project, both at the domestic and the international front. So with the release of Wandering Earth, China entered with a new kind of weapon, the weapon of Chinese science fiction soft power, propagating Chinese through the science fiction movies as well. But why the Chinese, the Chinese science fiction soft power deem a matter of strategic importance? Because the Chinese, they have a very different concept
of the soft power as compared to the Joseph Ney, you know, the theory of the soft power is that from the Sun Tzu, you know, what is the art of war, that to subdue the enemy without the war. So China has three core interests, the political, economic, and the sovereignty, you know, and the soft power protect all the three by changing the narrative from the negative portrayal of China, such as human rights, strict social regulation of President Xi Jinping, grand vision of a new kind of global governance, and China's broad strategic vision of the building of a global community with a shared future, which is actually projected in the Wandering Earth movie as well. They actually change the whole narrative from the original novel as well. And moreover, the countries that appreciate China's culture are more likely to respect China's position on diplomacy and increase trade and business. That is the second aspect of science fiction as a tool of soft power as well. And China is building its new soft power tool on soft power for two reasons. China wants to destroy the Western stereotype. China is not merely a manufacturing hub. It is becoming more of a center of innovation and creativity, especially after they believe that after the rapid development in the 5G technology, space, high-speed railway and skyscrapers, and all sort of electronic innovation or assembly as well, China is trying to self-reflect of its new technological advancement as they affect the helpful to others. Expressive and positive soft power will come from what you can produce based on your hard power, not from what you will offer in the future. But it has a very negative effect of like using science fiction as a tool of soft power. And one of the major negative effects is that most of the reader and the, you know, of the Chinese science fiction, they actually appreciate this particular novel because of the least interference of the Chinese government, and they're not very political contaminated. So if the Chinese institution, the government institution, they are using and they are actually planning the narrative and the theme of the science fiction novel in a very controlled manner, that will definitely hurt the feeling of the readers, and it will definitely, you know, subdue the image of the Chinese science fiction literature as such. And Chinese publishing industry is considered a tool that allows the regime to propagate its own political ideology. This means that the government agencies can play an important role in choosing a science fiction narrative that fits China's foreign policy agenda. Here is a very important thing. Science fiction is also related to the freedom and the choice. And if the government will decide the theme and the, you know, the topic, even the character for the science fiction novel, I think it will definitely lose its main grip and definitely lose the main essence of the science fiction as well. So my conclusion is very simple, is that the three-body problem unearthed the world of Chinese science fiction previously unknown to the rest of the world. A number of famous Chinese science fiction were also unearthed, including Chen Qiufan, Bao Shu, and Xia Zhen. Very famous, and their works are extremely good. Taking the Chinese science fiction literature to the international standard, yes, this is the most important, I think, achievement of the Chinese science fiction as such, because this is the main reason that why the Liu Cixin three-body problem is quite famous, because it has the same parameter, it has the same level of the authenticity, the creativity, and the imagination as compared to the Isaac Asimov and H.G. Wells, and you can name the science fiction writer as such. And it also shattered the Western stereotype that only the Western and developed countries can produce a quality science fiction. The best science fiction can come from anywhere in the world. And it also sparked a massive praise for the science fiction both domestically and internationally. And there is a growing interest around the world in Chinese literature. Because of the Liu Cixin, many people, they started reading more and more Chinese literature as such, including Mo Yan. I don't need to mention Mo Yan because he already won the Nobel Prize, but they are looking more and more for the Chinese, you know, literature, for translation, for publication, and even for the research purpose as such. But the most important thing of I would say that whether you can use for the propaganda, whether you can use for the soft power production or everything, ultimately the whole Chinese science fiction industry, and I would say the whole Chinese science fiction phenomena, is actually based on the one person, and that is the Liu Cixin. This is the major drawback. And it's a kind of reverse pyramid that although they have the young scholars, the young writers, and they have a lots of publication and everything, but most of the international publication houses and media, they are looking only and only for the Liu Cixin works. So Liu Cixin, he's under the tremendous pressure as such, and I believe it will definitely, kill his, you know, not imagination skill, but it will definitely censor his creativity as well. So I believe that after the success of Three Body Problem, the Chinese government is choosing Chinese science fiction as a tool of international propaganda, promoting Chinese technological, scientific, and military development through various science fiction medium. However, the global production and popularity of Chinese science fiction are still in a very primary phase. It remains to be seen how Chinese science fiction as a tool of soft power, as a tool of literature, can really shape the mind of the global audience with a state-approved narrative. So here I want to close my presentation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. We're starting with the question answer round.
Okay, can you close the
yes, ma'am.
Screen share? Okay. So thank you, Shanky Chandra, for this very broad presentation that has touched upon so many things, almost too many things, I would think, in terms of the novel itself. You've touched upon mostly you talked about the first, but the trilogy as well. What it's spanning. I mean, we didn't hear that much about actually the structuring of the novel in terms of the themes, but you did mention history and the Cultural Revolution. And the role that, and of course, this has been written about science, the extent to which science and, you know, real science, so to say, not fake science, seems to be structuring the novel. So, you know, the three-body problem itself is a genuine subject in science. Fermi's paradox, these are all actual issues. And then you moved on to its reception. And here I think things get a little complex in terms of this, and at least for someone like me who's not an expert on China, the combination of what you suggested was, on the one hand, extreme popularity within China, its export through translation outside, the winning of the Hugo Award, and its repercussions. It would, I don't know what you said too much about that, but the repercussions of that in China itself. What happens when China and the Chinese state hears about Obama or Zuckerberg's desire to read a novel like this? Does that in turn have its a kind of feedback effect in terms of what it means? But what is it about a book that, and this is where I myself have a question in my mind, because you mentioned that in earlier times, science fiction was considered anti-state by virtue of being anti-Marxist. And here is a book that on its own, or a trilogy that on its own, seems to then gain tremendous state support, in fact. So that almost there is a mirroring, if you like, of popularity and state support, which I think is a very complex and tricky question, given all the things you've said about freedom and censorship. Creativity and so on, and the doubts, the kind of doubts you raised towards the end. So I think on the one hand, we have this, it seems as though a single author is able to make this amazing kind of effect on his own society as well as beyond. And on the other hand, you're seeing all manner of ripple questions that you are left with, and which, you know, raises questions for all of us beyond the reading of a particular book or a set of books. I recall, I think it was an interview where Liu Cixin says that he wrote about the worst possible universe in order to have people imagine the best of possible Earths. So this juxtaposition of Earth universe, which in other contexts he's also compared to colonialism, which I found also very fascinating, of an indigenous people who've been colonized. Could that be, is that a viable comparison, something we know, something that China hasn't known? So in terms of this kind of structure and message, I'll stop here because I'm just throwing out ideas that are partly from my own read, but mostly from what you're presenting, and invite others to sort of respond, raise questions. I see that there's already, I think Ravi Bhutalingam has his hand raised. I think there is a Partho Mukhopadhyay has put a question in the chat box. How should we proceed? Should I read out Partho Mukhopadhyay's question, or Ravi Bhutalingam, would you like to start?
I think Partho had his question first, so why don't
All right. Here is the question. Can the scenario of how a highly sophisticated alien civilization attempts to impede scientific developments on Earth through various means be related to how US is trying to contain China's technological advancement, example, through recent semiconductor sanctions, which would mean Liu Cixin could be interpreted as a pro-regime author. So Earth is China and the alien civilization suffering is the US in this idea. Would you like to respond to that, Shanky?
Yes, ma'am. And actually, it's a very good question. The first thing is that this semiconductor issue is a quite a recent one, but they were actually discussing since 2017 in China. And most of the time that most of the science fiction conference, they try to correlate with the scientific development in China. And with the recent and contemporary issue, whether it is chip or any kind of, you know, technological transfer. So here is the very major issue, like most of the student, because even the audience and the, you know, the policymaker as well, that how can we produce, you know, chip as such, because chips are easily, you know, very cheap, easily available, right? But now we have the sanction. How can we, wrap up the production? So here, like, this is the first time, I think, in 2019 when he actually gave the statement that science fiction can, plant the seeds of creativity and everything. And if you look at the American example as such, right, and with the IC industry, you know, the integrated circuit development and everything, that we can learn from the history, but we can use the science fiction as a tool of creativity so that we can prepare our children from now onwards for the future to better prepare for the innovation and to better prepare for the creativity as such. So I believe that Liu Cixin could interpret as a pro-regime author, of course. And this is the major problem, even in my research as well. When I started writing my chapters, he said something very different. And now he actually completely changed all his statement. He said, no, my novel is not influenced by the Cultural Revolution, not influenced by the Tiananmen Square and everything. But one of the major reason is that we should also look at the socioeconomic background of the writer as well, that he was writing most of the science fiction novels and everything till 2018, and he was till that moment of time he was still working in the coal plant as a computer engineer, because there is no good money in the writing as well. But after that, because the government, that most of the science fiction program publication houses and everything is highly sponsored and financed by the government, so of course they have to follow the government narrative. Ultimately, army march on the stomach as well, so that's the thing. So they can kill their finance and as such. But yes, he become more and more pro-regime author, especially after the Xi Jinping came to the power. Otherwise, many of the authors, they were quite free to discuss any kind of problem. And whatever, you know, revelation I made here, it is actually stated by the Chinese author in the past, before the 2014. So I would say, because of the current, you know, regime, and because of the tremendous pressure from the, you know, from the party and everything, they have to follow the state narrative as well.
Ravi Bhutalingam, would you like to ask?
Shanky, thank you. That was a very fascinating presentation. And I have sort of one observation which I'd like you to also to comment on, and one question. The observation is that, as you say, I resound very agree with you very strongly that science fiction is a highly imaginative and entertaining way to inculcate love for science in children, particularly when the teaching system is a little oriented to rote learning, as it is in China and indeed over here. And that is an area where there is a complete congruence between what science fiction achieves and what the government would like to achieve also. So it's not surprising that the genre has been given a lot of support. But science fiction is also speculative about the future. So you can have speculations like Liu Cixin, where the narrative suits the government, but you can have other speculations speculating about future societies, say because of AI or surveillance or whatever, which might be darker and which may not be a good image. So how is the government going to bottle and unbottle this genie that has been released? That is one question. The second very interesting thing that I think your presentation has revealed is what is the connection, if any, between scientific creativity and non-scientific political speculation. In other words, can you have a pure scientific creativity which doesn't care a hoot about political freedoms and other things? I mean, that is probably a state of affairs which would be the ideal in China. So what is the engine of scientific creativity? I'd love to hear your, because you've talked to a lot of people, and I'd love to hear your view on this. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. I think that the most of the the Chinese science fiction works, which is quite famous now, it is actually what I can say is that published before the 2011 and even prior to that. Like take example of the three-body problem and everything, and at that time, there was not so many, you know, hard censure and censorship as well. And here is the point. For example, Chinese science fiction, the science fiction hub, or I would say the science fiction, the city is actually the Chengdu, the provincial capital of the Sichuan. But even though the Chengdu is the science fiction hub, but novel published in the Chongqing, not in Chengdu. And there is a reason for that, because during that period of time, the fight between the Po Xilai faction and the Xi Jinping faction. So Po Xilai faction provided a kind of freedom to the writers as well. That was the main reason that why the Chongqing publication, they published the three-body problem, because it was rejected all over the China except the Chongqing publication. So I believe that in that era of time, and I would say that in that period of time, there was a kind of literary freedom as compared to now, which is quite feasible for the science fiction writer as well. And they can publish anything with some parameters, because ultimately say that how can you publish about the government? And we can say that it's not about the government, it's about the future. And how can you say that it's about the current government? Or it's a current scenario. But I believe that after 2014, when the government start paying, because the Hugo Award and all kind of achievement, it is actually, they achieve because of the, there is no government involvement as such, till the Hugo Prize and everything. But after that, when the government, and especially the Chinese government, they look at the advantage of using science fiction for their own propaganda, I believe that the creativity and I believe the quality of the work, especially the science fiction work, will going to be, not doom as such, but I think as compared to the past, it's not at to the, par or something. Because for science fiction or for any kind of literary work, the freedom is the most important thing. And if they control the narrative and everything, it will definitely gonna hamper the creativity, especially in terms of the science fiction writer, because science fiction is all about, the creative thinking and imagination. And The second thing is that the second portion, it's a quite complicated, that scientific thought and the non-political scientific thought. This is the problem with the China, I believe so. And sometimes the Chinese science fiction writer, they compare with Amitabh Ghosh, the Calcutta Chromosome, and they also talk about the Vandana Singh. And they always mention one important thing, that the freedom played a very important role. And they already discuss this problem with the Chinese publication and with the Chinese government as such. You can provide fund and everything, but do not interfere in our theme and, you know, the topics and everything. Otherwise, it will definitely going to, you know, it could be a disaster for us, because whatever we have achieved, we achieve because of the freedom we have, because the platform we have. And this is the only platform available for the writer as such, but not anymore, especially after the, you know, the current geopolitical scenario and all the drama which is going on in China. So I think that in case of China, it's quite complicated to say that the creativity and everything, they can plan and they can innovate everything. Because even if you plan everything, whether it is creativity and imagination, freedom is the prerequisite thing. It is up to the scholar. It is up to the student or up to the kid, whether they choose to humanities or mathematics and everything. You can't plan everything. If you can plan everything, then I believe the USSR is the one of the best example for that. And that's why, because of the tremendous pressure of the government, it's not about the science fiction as well, but they are actually facing lots of plagiarism in all kind of field. You remember the Hanshin, the Chinese chip, they actually claim that they are the first one who actually created the chip. That is a copy of the Motorola. Their journals and everything, and they are actually suffering a lot of plagiarism because of the high amount of the pressure from the government that you have to publish more, you have to invent more. So I think there is a fundamental mistake from the government side that they should understand that you can't, you know, chip together creativity with the planning or creativity with the very control or with the kind of iron claws. So I think here, I think in case of China, it is quite complicated, and we have to wait at least, because the Chinese science fiction, especially after the three-body problem, it's in a very primary phase. So we have to wait at least 8 to 10 years to find out the final result as well.
Thank you. Hemant, I think you had your hand raised.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. First of all, of course, a big congratulations to Shanky. I haven't actually met him or discussed with him his research or this topic, which I wanted to do, but due to COVID and all that, last 3 years, I think we have been missing this opportunity. So good to listen to you. And also I feel kind of overwhelmed to see that how much he has evolved from where he began and where he has arrived at, in particular on this particular theme and research. So my question is, which has been throughout his presentation and even his reply to the last question and your observations, Mary, and other questions by Partho and Ravi, I think there is an undercurrent of what is reflected in my question also. And the question is that every time Liu Cixin is interviewed abroad or he travels outside China, invariably, he's always confronted with this question and he's asked this question. Last time I was reading, he was asked this question when he traveled to receive the Arthur Clarke Award in 2019. And he was asked about the creative freedom or literary freedom under the increasingly authoritarian China and authoritarian CPC, etc. Sorry. To which he has been consistently giving a very, very clear and categorical answer, and which is, and I quote him, and he says that fiction in general, or science fiction in particular, cannot serve as a commentary on history or current affairs. And this is very, very interesting to listen to his response. So Shanky, how do you understand or analyze his reply to this question? That is one. And second part of the question is that, do you also get the same sense as he has replied. When you discuss Liu Cixin with literary critics in China, by the Chinese literary critique, or when you read commentaries on Liu Cixin in China, do you get the same sense? That's my question.
Thank you, sir. I think that it's a self, like whatever he stated, it's a quite a self contradictory statement as well, because what he mentioned in his endnote in the first part of the trilogy, that is the Remembrance of Earth, the three-body problem, that he was inspired by the, you know, that why he wants to become an engineer, that he was inspired by the launch of the first Chinese satellite, the Dongfang Hong, the East is Red. And he also mentioned the Culture Revolution and the fighting between the all kind of fractions and everything. So I think that now he's quite restricted about his statement, and he simply rejected that no, it has nothing to do with the politics, with history, with anything. It's a complete fiction. And I'm writing fiction for the sake of fiction, nothing else. But in the past, especially during the 2008, 2009, 2010, in that era of time, he actually discussed this problem in the conference and in a very small circle in the Fudan University, where he discussed not in a very straight manner, but he discussed the political trauma he had faced during his lifetime. And that's how he put all the elements, for example, like the Culture Revolution and Ye Wenjie, when her father was killed by the Red Guards and everything. He had seen himself a lot of brutality and everything, and he discussed with the fellow writers, but he never wrote about it. And I do remember that he gave an interview in Sina.com in a blog. In 2014, it was available, but now all of his blogs are gone, whether it is Zhihu, whether it is it's kind of Yahoo.com and everything. So it is quite censored. So I believe that because even the Chinese government, they are well aware of that, the science fiction is the only platform available where they can discuss all sort of, you know, the political and not in a very free manner, but in like something is better than nothing, but in some kind of manner, they discuss all sort of things. So the Chinese government, they are very, careful about that. And now that was the last resort for the writers. Now it's ultimately it's under the control of the government. So he has to follow, and he is actually like following the, what we say, not the party line, but I would say he's very careful about his statement. But as compared to past, when the environment was pretty free, he used to discuss about all sort of problems. For example, his first novel, in which he mentioned when he transplanted the memories of the Mao in someone else. That is actually inspired by the Tiananmen Square incident, but he never mentioned. In fact, it was not published in China in a hard copy form. It is available in Taiwan. It is available on website. So I believe there is that whatever statement he is right now, he's giving, it's kind of self-contradictory. And even for my PhD work as well, it's quite complicated, because every time he changed his statement, I have to change the chapter as well, because that is the only, you know, what we say, primary material I have. And the second thing, when I conducted his interview, he clearly said that I won't answer anything related to my personal life. I mean to say related to my, you know, childhood and everything. And for a writer to know about his writing, everything, I believe whether the Sigmund Freud or the Marx, he said very clearly that you should know his that how, like what kind of childhood he had, what kind of trauma he faced and everything. And these events and these childhood experiences had a tremendous effect on their writing as well. But he never discussed about it. But I think it, because of the pressure of the government, he is not very free to say anything as compared to the past. That is my first observation. And the second question, I believe that in China, especially in case of the, and it's not about the case of the Liu Cixin, that most of the Chinese science fiction writers, because they are highly dependent on the government as such right now. So they want to say something, they can give you a verbal, you know, what we say, discussion and everything, but on writing, they are not going to say anything else, especially in the current regime as well. So I think that to comment on that, we should wait that whether the Xi Jinping, he will, you know, what we say, the change of regime or something, or he will, you know, the get off the crown of China, then we can see that what kind of authentic Chinese, you know, science fiction writing will come after that. But under this scenario, I don't think that anybody will give you the very, you know, the true or very, you know, authentic, you know, commentary or opinion about the Chinese science fiction, especially from the Chinese side.
Are there others who would like to comment, or please, Vijay Nambiar, yes, please go ahead.
Speak.
Yes, please. You are muted, sir.
I can't.
You're muted.
I think maybe the host has to unmute him or something.
Can you type otherwise into the chat box, perhaps, if there is a problem? Okay, there seems to be a problem. Anyone else?
Oh. Yeah, I think, Mary, I would like to ask one simple question.
Please.
Because, Shanghi, this is nothing about the current politics, but I would like to know a little more about the, you said you visited some of the hubs, and the China, as far as I know, they are doing a lot of work on the artificial intelligence and its application in the military purposes. So how that portion is coming up, and I know that especially in the cyber related issues, they are trying a lot of issues. So can you throw a little more light related to your research? Thank you.
Yeah, sir, I will state a very, one particular case during the conference in China. And they were discussing we have drones and everything nowadays, which is actually work on the algorithm we designed for managing and navigating and everything. And they were discussing a kind of robot which has a AI-based, functionality and all sort of thing with all sort of weapons and everything. In case, if we have no contact with that particular robot, how can they take the decision? How that particular robot will take the decision? How that particular robot will make a difference between the enemy and the soldiers and everything? In terms of technicalities, of course, we can have a lot of discussion. We can talk about that how can we design the backup algorithm and everything. But that is the very technical front of that. But in terms of humanities, they also discuss and they put this particular question in in the discussion forum as well. So this is the problem where the science fiction can help them out. Like, for example, can you trust AI? Right? Can you trust the AI in terms of targeting, in terms of human rescue mission and everything? And how can you make a decision as well? Because since 1972, they also discussed that even though we have one of the best software, since 1972, we have more than 50 casualties. The robot actually killed lots of workers and everything. That how can you rely on that as well? And what is the probability? It's not like the Terminator 2 or something, but there is a high probability as such that what is the probability that that these robots or these drone will not backfire or will not hit their own target as well. So they have this kind of serious discussion as well where they don't have the capability. For example, you need a quantum core, computers with all sort of calculation for these kind of discussion to maintain and to run the algorithm. So they don't have that kind of, they have, but the result will take lots of time. What about that if we put into the science fiction forum and we can discuss about it? Number one. Number two, the science fiction, for example, Tencent, the Tengshun, and they have an agency like a DARPA, like in the United States, the defense and everything. I forget the name, I'm still sorry for that. They are recruiting a lot of people from the science fiction background. And even those who are interested in the science fiction, and they are actually from the science stream as well. Because what it's not about the creativity and everything, but they are looking all sort of possibilities and you know, everything. And in some manner, they are also copying the, you know, the American system as well. That they actually started, you know, recruiting science fiction writer along with the physicist, nuclear scientists and everything. So they are very serious about it.
And because they are doing a lot of studies on the quantum mechanics related to artificial intelligence and applications of computers.
Yeah, and they are very good at the, like, they are very good at the software, right? They are, you know, and they are actually sometimes nowadays they copy the Google algorithm and everything. The only problem they have, the calculation with the help of the quantum core, you know, the chips and everything, which currently they don't have it. So in that, you know, moment of time, they discuss and they actually discuss all sort of possibilities, whether it is drone, whether it is self-propelled AI-based submarine, everything. And they are investing a lot of money on that as well. They have lots of scholarship. They have lots of funding through the Tencent, through the Alibaba. So I would say they are very serious about it. And some of the forum, and I didn't get the invitation because they are particularly meant for the defense talks and everything. So I think that... they are using all sort of possibilities, even in the science fiction, and using for their own, you know, what we say, according to the national requirements.
Thank you.
Are there others who would like to raise questions, or maybe from anyone who already raised a question would like to have something more to say?
Is Ms. Nambiar still there, or?
I think so, but there seems to be a problem with the muting, unmuting. Go ahead, why don't you go ahead?
No, he is now co-host, so he should be able to unmute himself. Patricia has unmuted herself, so I'll hold off while she asks.
Patricia?
Well, I was just going to pick up on something that Mary said in her first comments, that we don't get a very good sense of the structure of the novel as a piece of work. I mean, the engineering of the novel itself. This is about the social context in which it is written and the social impact that it may or may not have in China or elsewhere, about government policies towards literature. But one didn't get a very good sense at all about how one would go about analyzing it as a work of literature or a work of art. Uh-huh. And would you like to tell us a little bit about those critics? And it's been long enough now to have generated a huge critical literature. Those critics whose attitude or whose analysis of the novel actually is meaningful from your perspective. That is, what about the structure of the novel in itself?
Thank you, Patricia.
Thank you, ma'am. I think that even in the past, I tried my best to incorporate all three novels in one presentation. And actually, it was beyond the capacity from both ends. So what I think that the novel, in terms of, in terms of the literature, in terms of, the art or everything, I believe that if you pay attention, even in the Chinese language, there is no past participle. Like, they have the past particles and not like the English language and the grammar. So even in the Chinese novel, we can see that the writer and the author, they jump from one part from the past to the future, and then they will come back. because of the nature of the Chinese language as well. So it's very difficult to follow that particular rhythm. We can see in the, you know, in the trilogy as well, that sometime the author, they are talking about the Ye Wenji, and sometime they were in the past and then they're in the future. This is the major problem with the novel. Although it's quite good, even the characters and even the, you know, the main protagonist, that how the Ye Wenji, she look at the world, and how she absorbed all kind of brutality and everything. And she was looking for help from the extraterrestrial life, then come and save us from, you know, to save the humanity. So as compared to the other, you know, Chinese novel, which is also very dark and very realistic, I believe that the Three Body Problem also shares the same nature, but there's still, you know, space for the hope as well. Like in the first part, of course, they have the war and they become the part of a team which actually fighting the wall facer and everything, and the government trying to, you know, to plan everything against the alien in, you know, civilization. At the same time, the alien civilization, they are, that how they are looking at the, you know, the people from the earth and the survivability. And I would say the Hobbes theory, right? The survival is the basic instinct of a human being. So this novel, I would say, not very confusing in terms of narrative, but it's very clear in terms of survivability and humanity as well. So here is the question, that why the Liu Cixin, he put lots of, you know, things, whether it is culture revolution, astrophysics and everything. Of course, it's a part of the science fiction. But here, and he put his own, you know, experience as such, but he never accepted. In the past, he accepted. So we can comment on that because of his own experience of trauma, because he became the engineer, what kind of problem he faced for at least for 10 years, the school and everything was closed. He wants to read more and more science fiction, which is quite bad. So he wants to put his own trauma and everything, but not in a very, like, as compared to Isaac Asimov, H.G. Wells, which is quite, you know, straightforward, and which is, you know, the narration is quite good. I believe that in terms of, if we compare with the Western novel, the narrative is quite confusing with past and future and everything, because that is the nature of the Chinese language as well. But in terms of literary, you know, in terms of art, that is the one of the outstanding novel as well, because it shows on one hand the survivability, on one hand you lose all hope for humanity and you are looking for the help from the extraterrestrial life. But on the other hand, you're working and you're, you know, uniting all the people against the alien invasion. So it provides a choice to the audience and the readers, that if you are in the place of the Ye Wenji and the other wall facer, what you are going to do. So ultimately the conclusion is not very straightforward, but I believe that conclusion is like a question, what you are going to do about the world. So that is my observation.
Thank you. Parthu, do you now want to come in?
Thanks. I was just wondering, Shanky, if you could throw some light on, as you said, the universe of new or rather post Liu Cixin three-body science fiction writers? Are they coming up in different places? Do you have any idea about the demographic, the type of things that are being written about? Is it just more of what used to happen before, or within the genre, do you actually see any evolution or change pre and post Three Body?
Thank you, sir. I think that pre Three Body, we can see a parallel between the you know, Chinese science fiction, you know, with the Indian science fiction writers. Like in the past, like Jen Narlikar and other, you know, science fiction writers, they are either the scientist or the professor. So from from the liberation till the 1970s, or I would say the post-90s, that most of the famous science fiction writers, whether they are the professors or the academician, and they are not the full-time science fiction writer, except the Ye Yong Di and other people, and one or two writers. And after the three-body problem and everything, because it provided lots of opportunity and funding. And now it created lots of pool that, of course, the science fiction market is quite huge in terms of domestic and even in terms of international presence, because now they are, you know, producing lots of movies and everything. So the major difference between the pre and the post three-body problem, scenario is that now we can see more and more young science fiction writers, full-time science fiction writers, which in the past, I don't think it's quite possible. And this, the timeline is very important. Like from 2008 till 2011, we can see one of the best science fiction works in China. From 11 to 14, we can see a lot of translation in America and the Western world, because after the publication of Three Body Problem, the many of the publications, you know, houses, they are looking for more and more because of the, you know, the because of the publicity, because of the high demand as well. But after 2014, when the government realized that the science fiction, they don't even have any idea about it, to be very honest, that what are the achievements they are, you know, they're getting from the science fiction. I have seen a lot of full-time science fiction writers. They are also writing some kind of political commentary along with the science fiction works as well. So these are the three major changes. Like in the past, most of the science fiction writer, whether they are the professor or the academicians, some of them, they are the astrophysics as well. After Three Body Problem, Liu Cixin is the, I would say he was the professionally, he was an engineer. Han Sung, he was a translator in Xinhua News Agency. And Wan Qingkang, I think he was a professor as well. But after Three Body Problem, I think that we can see more and more mainstream full-time Chinese science fiction writers, especially the younger one.
Thank you. Any more comments or questions?
One more thing I would like to add is that if we compare with Indian science fiction, right? So Indian, in India, like whether it is the Tornado, which is written by the, you know, Jagdish Chandra Basu, the famous scientist, and we have more prior history of science fiction writing in India. Here in India, we actually promote science fiction, or like most of the writers who wrote the science fiction, they actually, published most of the works, not because as a tool of creativity, as a tool of, you know, scientific, you know, to develop a scientific temperament, but they actually, wrote lots of novels because of the literature, for the sake of literature. In China, that was not the case. It was started as a tool. Later, it was developed as a literary, you know, argument or literary, product. From the 49 till the 80s, it was used as a tool of propaganda to promote the scientific temperament and everything. Except 1990s and maybe the post 2000, we can see that is the only time period where we can see an authentic Chinese science fiction writing. Apart from that, most of the time it was used as a tool or as a propaganda. But even after that, now we can see a lot of, you know, correlation between the science fiction writing and the, you know, kind of projection as a soft power and everything. So this is the major difference between the Chinese science fiction and the Western, including the Indian. Here in India, it's a part of literature. In China, it was a part of literature, but for a certain period of time.
Any more questions? I think we now have, let me read this out, I think, from Vijay Nambiar. Liu Cixin has written some fascinating short stories. I have seen them recently in translation, and the range of their concerns is mind-boggling. Unless they were written before the three-body problem, they display a great sense of freedom and imagination. Were these stories written recently, or has he stopped writing more recently?
All right. He started writing the three-body problem, I think, around 1996. And that was an era of the, you know, the Chang Zemin. And there are lots of, you know, what we say, the China was more and more opening for West in terms of freedom, not in terms of like not Falun Gong and everything, but for writers, that was one of the best, not one of the best, but as compared comparatively better environment for that. But till that era of time, he was writing most of his work and everything, but not published. He started publishing in the science fiction, you know, monthly magazine in Chengdu from 2003. And then it was serialized. And in 2008, they compiled together and published in Chongqing, not in Chengdu. Whereas the Chengdu is the main hub of the science fiction, you know, publication and everything because of the political scenario and everything. So I think that he started writing science fiction even in the late 80s, like 89 or 90, as a hobby. And then as a not full time till 2013, I won't say the full time science fiction writing because he was still working over there in the, you know, the coal power plant and everything unless he got a lot of money so that he can, you know, completely rely on the science fiction writer. Yes, the freedom and imagination as compared to the past, especially prior to 2011 and 2012, the government were much more relaxed. They don't even pay attention to the Chinese science fiction because they put into the children's category till now. It's under the children's category. So they really don't bother too much until there is a lot of, you know, noises about the novel and everything. Then they will put more attention to that. But after 2014, because that becomes a cherry on the top that, okay, the three-body problem, the government realized, oh, and not even the government, even the international audience realized that, yes, they have a literature, they have a science fiction literature. But after that, the government, because it's like they started paying more attention to what kind of literature is this? Of course, it's a science fiction, whether it is with the line of party or against the party, because as the prior experience, whether it is Cultural Revolution or anti-spiritual movement, they actually completely banned from 82 to 1990 till the Tiananmen Square incident. They completely banned the science fiction literature. But I believe that recently, I think that he haven't published anything. Most of them, they are the translation of his previous work, which is quite good. And till now, he's working on lots of projects, but I don't have any, you know, I won't, you know, comment on that as well. But let's see that what kind of work will he will provide and look at the, you know, the freedom and, you know, the other imaginative perspective as well.
So, no, just to understand, what you're saying is that he's not writing now?
He's writing. But currently, most of the writings which is available, like about Liu Cixin, these are the translation of his previous work till 2019. Lightning Ball and other stories, these are the compilation of his previous writing. Or till 2017 and 18. And sometimes they add, even some Chinese writer, they publish Three Body Problem again and again with lots of other elements. And they have the freedom, they actually allow to do that as well. But currently, he's working on lots of projects, but I haven't seen anything new right now. So let's see that what kind of work or what kind of work will come and then we can look at the, whether it is quite streamlined or the tailor-made, you know, what we say, literary work or it is as good as the past.
I read somewhere that there are fans in China who are now writing in the wake of his works.
That's a kind of after trilogy, they added lots of things. They actually created, it's a kind of, you know, what we say, the fourth part of the three-body problem. And whether in terms of magazine, whether in terms of fanzines, and whether in terms of animated series and everything, in terms of comics. So the fans, they are actually trying to add more and more with the three-body problem because it provides a lot of space. Because in the end of the third part, right, still there is a space, a lot of space as well. So, but of course, the science fiction fans, especially in China, they are very creative. They are very creative about it because there is a market feasibility as well. You can pay a WeChat money to any kind of author if you like it, and they will get the money as well. So economic feasibility is also a very important point for that kind of experiment as well.
Okay. Any others, or should we bring it to a close?
We are running out of time.
Are we? Okay. Then let me thank everyone and thank Shanki Chandra especially for giving us this very interesting and wide-ranging presentation where we have so many questions and so many doubts, and we seem to be looking to China for answers now, even about our future of the universe. So I don't know if that is a source of we should be disturbed or we should be hopeful about that fact. Thank you very much, and thank you again for asking me to chair. Hand over to Sugandha, please.
Okay. With this, we would like to wrap the session, and we would like to thank the panelists for giving us our precious time. The video of today's discussion will be available on ICS YouTube channel. We would also like to invite everyone for the next week Wednesday seminar on mechanisms contributing to China's technological progress by Ramakrishna Velamurthy. Information related to the same will be available on the ICS website, or you could subscribe to our newsletter for the regular update. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you so much for giving this opportunity. See you.